Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Andy Shea. Andy, how are we doing this week? Are you still good. Celebrating my Eagles Super Bowl win?
Excuse me? No. No. I mean, I enjoyed watching him win. Am I going to celebrate the Eagles winning? No, I'm a fan of an alternative NFC franchise I'm a fan of. So I don't dislike the Eagles, but as an NFC guy, I'm like, I root for them in the Super Bowl. I thought they were going to be the better team, and I thought they would win, but yeah, I'm not celebrating. Okay. Well, I know you are.
Full disclosure, Andy's got on his Tampa Bay Buccaneers hoodie, looking good, looking sharp, but not going to celebrate with us on the Eagles win. All right, Andy, let's move forward. Let's get to some Penn State football. James Franklin met with the media this week. And, you know, just in an overview of it, Andy, I can be critical of the media. I could be critical of James Franklin in these things. But I thought as far as press conferences go, James is actually fairly candid in these, more so than I think most coaches. And I thought the media did a pretty good job hitting the main topics that we would be interested in.
Yeah, James, there's a couple. James is starting to use his platform and find his voice as a national program. And he's doing it on, you know, some 30,000 foot things beyond talking about his program in Penn State. And he does have a lot to say these days. I mean, they were one of the final four programs and were literally half a step away from going to the national championship game this past year. That turns the bright lights on you a little, no matter what. And, you know, he's sort of chatty. He had something to say about, I was reading through his transcript about, you know, the transfer portal and what's it being illegal. And he kind of corrected himself. He said, well, I don't want to say it was a little tongue in cheek, but he was making a statement like, this is what's happening. And it's not supposed to happen this way. It was sort of a side comment to everything else, but he's using, you know, his platform. He did have a lot to say. He had a lot to reveal. And let's be honest. He had a lot to talk about, right? He's got a bunch of players coming back. You know, he's had some more turnover on the coaching staff, particularly at the coordinator position. He's had a lot of coordinators the last three, four years, Jimmy. And that's not saying he's been firing them and, you know, they've been running away like crazy. It's just, that's the way it's gone, right? Head coach. So he did fire one, but he fired two. Well, one parted ways and he fired one. But it's just, there is a lot going on. And I think he had some player personnel stuff that he gave. And he gave us some inside baseball. So there was a lot to it in, you know, like, what was it, 45 minutes or so, 40 minutes that he made himself available. They're getting ready. They're starting winter workouts. Guess what? Kind of football season again. It's February. Guess what's coming up in April, Jimmy?
We know. The spring game.
Spring practice.
Blue-white game, of which he talked about, and we'll get to that also. But you mentioned, Andy, about him finding his voice. I think he's, through experience, he has learned. He's gotten burned a couple times for some of the things he's said. Not being aware of all the repercussions. And to be honest with you, I get it. I think some of it, the media takes it and runs with it. Remember, great to elite came back to haunt him a bit. I think, well, now also
he deserved that because it was accurate.
Well, he did, which is true.
It was accurate and you don't really want to hear it, but he was emotional, right? It was a tough loss, and he was like, and it came flying out. It wasn't a mile outside the box, and it was bluntly true.
And he learned he had to wear that.
Correct.
And I think now, as more of a national program, and you saw with the playoff, he made some comments, some things we're very familiar with. His take on, you know, the Southeast Conference only plays 8 conference games. The Big Ten plays 9. He doesn't think that's right. And I agree with him on it. But he also chose prior to Notre Dame playing. I don't think he was trying to be critical of Notre Dame, but he mentioned how they didn't have to go through a conference and a conference championship game. So that's not quite right. And he's probably right. But, you know, that Notre Dame turns that into, you know, bulletin board material on him.
Sure, sure.
And I think that's just another lesson in this whole, you know, being the head coach at Penn State is more forward facing, more attention than you get as head coach at Vanderbilt. And I think now being a head coach at Penn State, when it's a college playoff team, made it to the semifinals, it's even more exposure nationally. So I'm not going to say, hey, James, you know, pick your words more carefully, because I appreciate the candor, but I think he's learning more and more just how much the repercussions from the things he says. So let's go through it a lot, because he did get to a lot, Andy. I think he started with his opening statement. He made mention of the Super Bowl players, specifically Saquon Barkley, but Jahan Dotson, Castro Fields. And it's nice of him to congratulate his players that have made it to that point. But I also think it's smart. Oh, by the way, this Saquon Barkley guy that everybody watches in the NFL, he came through Penn State. We're the ones who got him there. And I think that's just a nice little recruiting.
James is always recruiting. He's really good at it. We've said that for a dozen years, Jimmy. It's a strength. It's one of his best assets. It never wavers, and he never misses it. Now, the way he builds relationships, they're very personal, right? You talk to, you know, the guys in the NFL and the players, and their relationship is very personal. I don't know how many hours a day he spends on his phone, but it must be like a good amount, because in order to be relational the way you need to be today, you have to use your phone and communicate and text people. And he does a lot of that, not just through social media, but on his own. So he's very active and engaged. And him and Barkley always had a special kind of relationship too, right? Like, it was just a little bit different, but he congratulated. He's always recruiting, Jimmy. And that's just, he's good at it. And that's a good way to do it. But at his core, he's like, he's really glad for those guys, but he's also not going to miss the opportunity to throw out the recruiting line. And he should.
And right. And it's smart to do. And if you notice, he will take every opportunity to mention a family member also of players, which, again, Andy, that's just good recruiting.
Well, it's good recruiting, but see, though, here's the difference for me. It's good recruiting, and it is a recruiting tool, right? Like, you have to appeal to the fan. It is a recruiting tool, and he uses it, but for him, it's actually not just a recruiting tool. It's actually something that is very important and part of his sort of DNA. I've always liked to remind people that at his core, James Franklin is at his core as person. He's an introvert, right? Like, he does a very good job of it, but at his core, he likes his quiet time. He prefers to be by himself. Not, you know what I mean? Like, in his time that's his, he's more of an introverted personality-wise. And introverts tend to be very, you know, insular and loving and caring of those in their circle. He has a very expanded circle, but he understands the value proposition and the role that parents play, and he harvests that because that fills him up, the person, not him, the Penn State football coach, him, the person that's important to him. So there's a distinct difference between James, the recruiter, when it comes to family, and James, the person. That's one distinct difference. I'm not, you know, I just want to make sure from my experiences and being close and understanding and being and dealing with them that this is real. This is not just him dropping the recruiting mom and dad and grandma line. That's not just a line. He actually lives it.
Well, I think that's the, you know, what comes first. And I think what comes first, Andy, is he does appreciate relationships. He does cultivate it, not just with the individual player, but also their families. That's what comes first, and that is authentic. I think then after that, he's smart enough to take advantage of it.
Yes.
And I think that's where early on, remember, you know, we got the description of him as the used car salesman and the snake oil salesman, that it was phony. But I think you find that after all these years,
yeah,
it's real. You don't fake that for a decade.
No, it's legitimate. I could say that from the inside out and the outside in.
Yes, and if you've ever met him and were able to talk to him in a social setting, you find out that he truly is, you know, a charming person, fun to talk to, interesting, and it's obviously a skill set that helps in the recruiting process, Andy, and you know that's just part of the personality. And I didn't mean to go this far off on this topic, but I think that this example, again, of him calling out, giving a shout out to his players that were in the Super Bowl, I think it's just another example of it, both the relationships he has formed with those players and also how, as you pointed out, he's always recruiting.
Yeah, he's a master at it. I think he's one of the, you know, top five in the country when you talk about recruiting in college football today, despite all the changes and everything. I think before all of these most recent changes, he was top five. And I think after it, and he's learning to navigate, you know, the sort of the transfer portal and NIL in his own likeness and image. He's outstanding at it, Jimmy.
He really is. He's fantastic at it. All right, Andy, we got a lot more to cover with this press conference. We're going to do that when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Andy Shea. I'm Jim Galante. This is quarter number two of our show. And Andy, just to put a quick bow on our conversation about James Franklin, and I'm sure at one point or another I've told this story on the air, but I'll give the shortened version of it. A few years ago, I got to meet James Franklin in a social setting, not as a media person, and was just so impressed with him. And he reminded me, there's only one college coach that he reminded me of, and this is someone I met when I was just a youngster, a teenager. I got to meet Jim Valvano, which is a name I'm sure our younger audience may not be familiar with. The older ones, I'm sure you are. Basketball coach, won a national championship at NC State, and you see him on ESPN Honored. He died way too early of cancer, but I got to meet him when I was like 14 years old, Andy, and the charm, the personality, I'm, you know, it was at a basketball camp and I'm, you know, 5.5 foot tall. I'm not going to be going to college to play basketball. However, if I were, I would have followed that man anywhere. And at the time he was, I believe, the coach at Bucknell.
Correct.
So he was a long, long way from being the national figure that he turned into, but that personality was already there. And that's who James Franklin reminds me of. Anyway, let's move on, Andy, because James Franklin did cover a lot in his press conference. I was really fascinated how much detail he went into in bringing Jim Knowles in from Ohio State, Andy.
Yeah, I think it was his opportunity to sort of explain what everybody else is kind of thinking, but really kind of is saying, but kind of isn't saying, like, how the heck did they get this guy? Right? Like, you know, that was your initial, like, really? And this was on the heels of Ohio State offering him more money than any other college coordinator, defensive coordinator, at least in college football, to stay at Ohio State. And, you know, I don't think James fully expected this to really happen. That's the impression I got. Like, it was a possibility, but there was a list of possibilities. James always has a list. He always has a list. So he's always prepared. That is another one of his strengths. But yeah, okay, Jim might have been on this list. He had a previous relationship with him. But if you're looking at it on the core and then you hear Ohio State's offering him more money than anybody else, and you're like, well, I guess we could take that guy off the list. And no, because it sounded like when James shared the devil in the details, he was continuing marching on as if it's a most likely possibility that this is not going to happen. There's still a chance, but we're not going to sit on a chance. We're going to keep moving as fast forward as we can. And that's what they were doing. And then it came to a screeching halt. And this was, I don't think James had it, to be honest with you. I don't, from listening to this. Yeah. Okay. James is the head coach, but I think this was a Jim Knowles decision more than anything else. James just presented Penn State's opportunity, right? And he wasn't trying to sell him or, you know, anything else. It was just like, hey, Jim, we'd love to have you. This is what we got to offer. We'd love to have you. And I think this came down to a Jim Knowles decision.
I think so too, Andy. And what's interesting, and this is kind of a theme kind of going on, at least around Penn State and some other schools, this lateral move among coaches, mm-hmm. that you usually, historically, you haven't seen many of these, but we saw it: Tom Allen, Penn State to Clemson, now Jim Knowles from Ohio State to Penn State, taking the same coordinator position. And I'm sorry, and this is going to be the conversation then with Juwan Sider also. When there's that lateral move,
yep.
Instantly, there's more going on, Andy. There's more going on.
There could be a little bit more going on. And remember, now coordinators and lateral moves, the head coaching position in college football has changed dramatically in the last 3 years, Jimmy, right? Like, you don't coach as much. Chip Kelly's a great example. Chip Kelly at his core is just a ball guy, right? Just wants to coach and coach a little bit of old school style, I guess we could even say it. And he was, UCLA wasn't looking to fire him or get rid of him. He's just like, nah, I just want to coach this. The head coaching job has changed too much for me in the last few years, and I just want to go back to coaching. So he became Ohio State's offensive coordinator and helped lead them to a national championship. So yeah, the lateral move is, it's to me, the lateral coaching move fits the player move. It's like an elevator, right? Like, you're moving up, but are you really moving up? And does money play a role? Does how long you've been with a program? I don't know, but I know losing Juwan Sider at Penn State as a running backs coach, for that coaching staff and what he's done and developed and recruiting, that cuts like a knife. Because it's first of all, it's Notre Dame. It's Marcus Freeman sort of, you know, punching and counterpunching, which ends a little bit. I kind of like it. I think they're two very good, respectable, honorable men, and they're just kind of, they're feeding off each other. And they're trying to one-up each other. Nothing wrong with that. And, you know, Marcus is like, that's the best running backs coach I know of. I want him. And he went and got him. Same, James is like, the best defensive coordinator I know of is Jim Knowles. He went and got him. So they're going to win some, they're going to lose some, I think.
Well, Andy, see, I'm going to use your own words here. That you said Jim Knowles coming to Penn State was more about Jim Knowles than Penn State making that decision. And I agree. But I think that's the case. I think the instinct for most people at their jobs are, I'm working here, I've been here a while, and for me to move to take another job, and I always relate these things to private industry or the real world for the rest of us and our listeners to relate to. Most people, if you have a job and your family and you live in this town and you've been here for the last 10 years and someone offers you a comparable job elsewhere, it's got to be a better job because it's easier to stay here. I, you know, way back in my career, Andy, I had a recruiter come and offer me a job in California, okay? I'll never forget it. And I was so flattered that they were coming after me. But it was essentially an identical job, similar pay. I'm not going to move for the same thing unless there were something wrong at my current job. So, you know, this is not inside knowledge that there's an issue, but I think Jim Knowles, there was something going on at Ohio State. He wasn't the happiest camper there. So he was open to change. Now, the fact that the change was going to be more money, bring him back to Pennsylvania as a Pennsylvania guy, and he apparently has an affinity to Penn State, was all part of that. That's maybe why he ended up at Penn State and not at Oklahoma, say. But when these guys make lateral moves, and I'm not saying I'm right all the time, Andy, but I'm going to always suspect with a lateral move that there was something more going on. With Tom Allen, maybe it was, you know what, Penn State wasn't going to match what Clemson offered. Obviously, they had the money because they spent it on Jim Knowles, but they chose not to. And, you know, we'll get to Juwan Sider, but I'm going to say something more was going on there. But just sticking with Jim Knowles for a minute, Andy, I think another part of this, the conversation with James Franklin, which I thought was interesting, was he just went through this with Andy Kotelnicki. And remember a year ago we talked about this where James Franklin would say, oh, we're not totally changing the offense. It's just going to be tweaked. And I think some folks were critical of him for saying that. But was Andy Kotelnicki not going to be allowed to do his thing? Well, I think after a year, we could say Andy Kotelnicki got to do his thing. The conversation now is with Jim Knowles in the defense. Will Jim Knowles be able to do his own thing? But there's also the conversation of merging what Penn State does with what right. Knowles does. And yeah, that's the work they're doing right now.
Yeah, James talked about it in detail, how it's like in James coach speak, and if you know, you listen to Jay, this is arduous, right? The process of getting, you know, this coordinator reinstallation while taking the new kind of, this is the way you did it. This is the way we did it. This is what it was called. This is how we did it. This is what we saw. What did you see? That grind, he's had to do it a couple, several times on both sides of the ball. It's getting old to him, right? He's not tired of it or like, this is, you know, I hate this part of it. It's just so arduous and meticulous and slow and grinding. It's the hardest work he has to do in the offseason, and he's had to do a lot of it. in the last 3-4 years. So he's got some continuity on the offensive side, but now he's got to do it again on the defensive side of the ball. It's just a grind. That's literally all it is. Because eventually, and James is a bit more of an offensive guy than the defensive guy, and he's got to trust that DC to come up with the answers that he wants to hear. James is ultimately going to make the decisions, but he's got to know and be comfortable and confident in what he's being told, how they want to execute it. So it is a grind.
But this is a process-driven kind of task.
Oh, for sure.
And if there's one person who is great at process-driven tasks, Andy, it's James Franklin. You know, he has his book on things. This is how we are going to do it when this comes up. And, you know, I give him credit for that. And I think he's already done his homework. And the fact that he went through this just a year ago on the offensive side, Andy, will help him on this side of the ball now.
He kind of went through it on both sides of the ball last year, Jimmy.
That's true.
And yes, he is process driven, and I do agree with you, but this is hard.
It is. It's a process, but I trust his ability to do it. All right, that's it for quarter two. Coming up, your questions. We ask Andy when we get back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Andy Shea. Quarter number three. It's time to ask Andy. Andy is reveling in this because he obviously loves answering your questions more than he likes answering my questions.
Fair point. Fair point. I love the off-season questions. I think they have more depth and more thought to them. The season questions, they're still okay, but it's pretty obvious, you know, the two or three things you can ask. Pretty much week to week, but the offseason, open season. Let's go.
Let's get right to it. Let's start with Mike from Baltimore via the coal region. Mike, you got to let us know exactly where in the coal region you came from next time, all right? Mike says, this isn't a Penn State question, but it's a chance to go off on Paul Feinbaum. I'm all for that. Recently, the Navy athletic director crushed the mouth of the South because Feinbaum said the Army-Navy game doesn't deserve its own Saturday and TV window, and it should be moved from the second Saturday in December so the college football playoffs can start earlier. Personally, I have been to two Army-Navy games, and they are special. Andy, your thoughts? And I'm especially curious because you're a veteran.
I am a United States Army combat veteran. So
go Army, beat Navy.
Correct. We got smoked last year. But anyway, and we were the better team, but we got smoked. So here's what his core point has merit, right? Paul's core point has merit because the ending's a little too late. They have to make adjustments. But I go back to, like, in the last year to 18 months, you know, I've never minded Paul, but now I'm like, he's the grumpy old guy that's got the sprinkler or the hose on his, sitting on his big old front porch. Get off my lawn! Like, he's got this grumpy off my lawn, and the SEC's sort of self-implosion, you know, the what they did to themselves as a conference in the first year of the playoff, while massively entertaining and fun to watch during the course of the regular season, they kind of cannibalized themselves, and he's grumpy about that. Made a grumpy person even more grumpy and have more get off of my lawn. At his core, the playoffs needing to start and change its date is correct, but it's not going to be fixed in a year, and it's certainly not going to be fixed by removing the Army-Navy game from its own window. But the side point of the Army-Navy game, just real quick, Jimmy, is it's the breather for teams as you move forward to get ready for it. It's a good concept, but he presents it wrong. He's a grumpy old man. Get off my lawn.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I agree with you, Mike, sending in the question. Any chance to, take down Paul Finebaum is good. The problem with Finebaum is he's become almost like a caricature of himself. He's lost all credibility. So when he does say something of merit, you just dismiss it.
Like, it's hard, yes.
He could say, I'm having a ham and cheese sandwich, and you say to yourself, there must be a reason to support the Southeast Conference for him to tell us what he's having for lunch. You know, just everything he says is to push the SEC agenda. I do believe, though, with the Army-Navy football game, where it was, hey, it comes after the College Football Selection Committee, playoff committee. It literally, we almost had it where Army could have been involved in the, playoffs, and they haven't even finished their schedule. My personal opinion, Andy, is they should move that to weekend number one of this season, maybe like Labor Day weekend when there's so much there. I know there's a lot of games there, but give the Army-Navy game its own window, wherever it is, give it its own window. And I think if it's played the first weekend, it can be just as special as at the end of the window, because I'm with Mike. I think it's very special. And I hate to admit this, Andy, but when I worked in D.C., my client was the federal government, specifically the Navy. I'm a Navy guy because of that, Andy. So we'll have to fight that out. All right, let's go to Ann from Ann Arbor via State College. Ann says, in years past, we would hear about winter conditioning. With the players having played so far into the playoff, are they still doing winter conditioning in the same way? Andy, I think James Franklin addressed this a little bit in his press conference, so it's a good question.
It's a good question, Ann. And you always knew with what was it, 17 games, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 games, right? Like that's an NFL season. That's not a 12-game season. You knew there was going to have to be a two to four week adjustment on, how much time they get off. The time off was shortened. They only got 2 weeks off this year, but they're changing how they do it this year based on the fact that they had to play 16 games. The timetable didn't move, but how they manage it inside those weeks is vastly different this year in order to get them, they'll start slower and build slower to work towards spring practice. That's how the winter workouts are going to go this year. The time frame didn't necessarily change. They had a shorter off window. They just slow rolled it at the beginning.
Well, and I think James Franklin also mentioned this. It's going to be by specific player also. All the way back to Joe Paterno, how he would treat his veterans. You know, Nick Singleton, Katron Allen, Zane Durant, those guys, they don't really need this spring practice to work out. This gives them more time to focus on the young guys. And to be honest, James Franklin talking about adjusting the spring game again, as he always threatens to do. James, just let the young guys play. That's fine. If you don't want reps for those veteran guys we just mentioned, don't give them reps. Let them be. Go to the young guys. As fans, would still like to see those guys play. All right. Let's go to Bill in Edison, New Jersey, who says, I'm sure you both watched the Super Bowl. Wanted to get your thoughts on the game and halftime as two old guys.
What do you call an old, Bill? So which one do you want to start with, Jimmy? The halftime or the game part of it?
I think we've reviewed the game enough. People know how I feel about how the Eagles played. You mentioned it earlier. I'm more curious to get your take on the halftime, Andy.
Yeah, so I would qualify now as an old guy. I've joined you in the sixth decade of life. And I wasn't it I didn't mind it, but I didn't I kind of didn't after like 5 minutes I was like, yeah, I'm not gonna watch this. Not because I don't because I dislike the music, rap music per se. I like some of it. The show a couple years ago with Snoop Dogg and everything, I thought that was really cool. That engaged me. This halftime show didn't engage me, but I think it's tough for the NFL because I think they're making a lot of asks and they're getting a lot of no's, right? So I don't know. I just it doesn't move my needle. I don't care about the halftime show anymore. If there's an artist I want to see, I might watch it. I watched a couple years ago when they had Snoop Dogg, because I'm a Snoop Dogg guy. I like Snoop. But I wanted to see everybody around him. It was a little bit old school. And I was like, oh, this is really well done. I wanted to watch that. I didn't know much about this guy. So I was like, I don't really want to watch it. I will say, I love the dancers coming out of the car. I thought that was really cool. And I was more drawn to the dancers than the artists, to be honest with you. But I still, about halfway through, I was like, all right, I've had enough. I'm going to go do something else.
Andy, I am definitely an old guy. And first of all, turning 60 means you're now starting your seventh decade, not your sixth decade on this earth. Okay. The next thing, I am an old guy. I don't appreciate the music. I try to give it a chance. To be honest, I wasn't entertained. I couldn't understand the words. I actually put on closed captioning so I could know what the lyrics were. Didn't help. The other part was I found out afterwards there was a lot of messaging going on in this. And so I had to re-up to learn what the messaging was. And to be honest, that didn't help make it any more attractive for me. If anything, it kind of went the other way. So I'd like to see them go a different direction. I was not crazy about it. I went and got something to eat. All right, Andy, let's get to the next question. Let's get to Rob, who doesn't tell us where he's from. Rob, next time you send in the question, let us know where you're from. We like to find that out. Rob says, with the return of so many players, the high-end defensive coordinator hire, it seems that Penn State is intent on spending the money to be a top-tier program. What do you think was the most important cause for this obvious change in philosophy?
Ohio State. They're still chasing Ohio State, right? They have a target. I think they're the defending national champions this year. Michigan, defending national champions from 2 years ago. Who does Penn State, until this year, always played Ohio State and Michigan? So they had tangible, measurable, in your face, on your front lawn, playing them pretty much every year. Now they're going to play one or the other every year. It's right in front of you. You know what it smells like, looks like, and tastes like. You see how they go about their business and how to get there. They're not copying, per se, the blueprint. James is going to do it different because it's Penn State's program. But there are some things he can glean from it. That's my takeaway, that they're going with. It's pretty much the Ohio State and what's in front of it.
Well, Andy, I'm going to approach the question a little differently with Rob, in that I think that incentive has been there since James Franklin has gotten there. Ohio State is who he's chasing. I think the difference, I took his question to mean, what's going on? How come now all of a sudden they're spending all the money doing all these things? I think Pat Kraft is a huge difference.
Yep.
And I think that President Benintendi, I think, and James Franklin mentions both of them all the time. Absolutely. James Franklin, from the time he got here, has consistently asked more money for assistance, more facilities. He's always looking to do that. Now the difference is he's got the cooperation, and when the university, the athletic department, goes to the board and says, hey, we want this, the board is saying yes to those requests. All right, that's it for Ask Andy, quarter three. We got lots more to go with quarter four. Stick with us.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hall Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four of our show. He's Andy, I'm Jim. We're talking Penn State football. And Andy, James Franklin had his press conference earlier this week. So much to cover there. We talked mostly in quarter one and two about Jim Knowles coming in. I think the other thing, big deal, is Juwan Sider. And the tie-in to Juwan Sider, running backs coach, leaving is we've seen Tom Allen leave Penn State for Clemson, same position. We've seen Jim Knowles leave Ohio State for Penn State. Same position, lateral move. Now we're seeing Juwan Sider, who, at least as of our recording, it's not been officially announced by Notre Dame, but I just think that's, you know, they got to get.
James said he's gone.
They got contracts signed. Yeah, James made it official at the press conference.
He gone.
Said his goodbye. I'll start with this, though, first, and this kind of leads to the theme I brought up earlier, Andy, that with these lateral moves, until proven otherwise, I'm always going to assume something else is going on at the original school. I think something goes going on with Knowles at Ohio State. And now I think, you know, there might have been something going on with Sider in Penn State. For him to make a lateral move, Andy, I think there's more going on.
I don't think you're right, Jimmy. I think there is something kind of going on, but I think looking from the outside in, they have always had James and Juwan Sider. They've always had a good relationship. You see them recruiting a lot together. They have a good relationship. To me, I think ultimately this for Sider, this is about next level opportunity. For a couple years now, we've been like, man, I hope they hold on to that guy. He's sort of looks like a potential OC maybe at somewhere, or a lower level, you know, FBS head coach potentially, right? Like, he's got a lot of elements going for him. So here's the thing. Does Notre Dame as their running backs coach present an opportunity for him to advance and become an offensive coordinator in a major program in South Bend than it does in State College? And my answer to that, the way you look at it, is that would be a legitimate, logical reason in my head. Because if you think about it recently, I'm not talking about back in the day when he was a newbie assistant and running backs coach at Penn State and they did transition, but there's been three transitions at offensive coordinator in very recent past at Penn State. And Sider was always still the running back coach. Nothing wrong with that. But he's clearly, it tells me that James doesn't clearly see Sider as an OC under his leadership. Right? Maybe that opportunity exists at Notre Dame. It doesn't mean their relationship is fractured or they had a problem. It just means maybe Marcus presented a different opportunity than Penn State has shown him. That's all I'm thinking.
Andy, see, that's my point, though. James Franklin, if you want to say he's saying, obviously, Juwan Sider's not offensive coordinator material at this level, and Juwan Sider wants to get to the next level, I'm sure Sider has had opportunities for coordinator positions elsewhere. Maybe not at Ohio State, Michigan, Notre Dame, Alabama level, but maybe it's, you know, that next level. Maybe it's Wisconsin or Iowa or, you know, North Carolina State or something like that. But to me, that's the logical step up not this lateral move to Notre Dame. So, you know, unless Notre Dame was hiring him as offensive coordinator, I still look at this as a lateral move, Andy, and something is up. But let's talk, you know, the next step, which is getting a replacement. And you could look at this a couple different ways where it's, hey, this has got to be an attractive job at Penn State. You come in right away with two really good running backs. You've got some youngsters coming up. You've got the legacy of the running back position. The negative side, though, Andy, is it's a little late in the process.
Yeah, it's wonky timing. I don't know if that was intentional by Marcus at Notre Dame, but it's left Penn State in a weird timing position. The length of the college football season, like the lockup window has passed. You know, you could look at NFL guys. Well, that's kind of locked down too, right? Like, so you're looking at buyout money and those kind of things. It's not free agent coaching, position coaching season. That ship sailed. And now Notre Dame stepped in and grabbed Penn State's high profile. Let's just call it what it is. That's a high profile position coach at Penn State. It has been for many years under Jawan Sider. So Penn State's in a very tough position. That's part of, you know, why this one cuts like a knife in my mind. It's the front end and it's also the back end. This is going to be a tricky hire. And I think not that Pat Kraft, and you mentioned it earlier, is not providing James opportunity and resources. He is. But how much is too much? And it's going to require a little more than it would, say, 3 weeks ago, a month ago, right? It's just a different time frame, and it's going to require more money.
And apparently that's not an issue right now at Penn State. They went the extra mile to bring in Jim Knowles. And now for the running back, because it's not position coach free agency time, you use the word poaching a coach that Marcus Freeman poached Jawan Sider. I like the word. That's maybe the route that James Franklin has to take. Now, we've heard names like DeMarco Murray from Oklahoma. I find it fascinating that, you know, first we heard they're talking to him. Then we heard from a source, nope, that he's staying at Oklahoma. Then another Oklahoma source said, nope, he's still talking to Penn State. So in James Franklin's explanation of the Jim Knowles transition, we learn that, you know, it's a winding road getting these things done. So I'm sure it'll be the same case here. But again, Andy, to that point about James Franklin being very candid in this press conference when talking about what he's looking for at running back coach, he kind of did the, you want to hit the point where just right.
Right.
That young guy, up and comer, may not be ready year one. You might have to wait for year two for the return on investment. And then the old guy, well, are his best years, you know, behind him, which, by the way, was my one hesitation with Jim Knowles. Was this, you know, kind of just his last job? I've since, in hearing him talk, looking at his history, I don't think that's the case with him. But I thought it was interesting that James Franklin went down that path and said, hey, look, you know, some of these, that obvious up-and-comer or that obvious big-name veteran may not be the right answer.
I think James is going to have to be just a little more, he will be a little more picky, I guess is a good word. More strategically, he's in a stronger, he's scrambling a little bit because of the timing, but strategically he's in a strong position because what he has to offer somebody is the best 1-2 running back combination in college football going into the 2025 season. End of story. Behind that, four stellar recruits to build on and a room that is loaded with talent. Who wants that? So that's what he has to offer, and that allows him to be maybe just a little more pickier and a little less in the scramble mode. overall, it's still scramble, but he's got a lot to offer, and that is that gives him leverage, right? The money's not an issue, so he's got leverage in the assets he's got to offer right out of the gate. And obviously, they have to be a great recruiter because that matters to James.
Yeah. Well, it should matter to anyone. That should be, especially at position coach, I think that's the most important thing.
True.
And I think James Franklin, I think, has learned over the years now, going through as many different coaches, coordinators, as many hires, that it's not just the resume, it's the fit. You know, right. This guy fit with us? I thought it was also interesting, the conversation, Andy, and I think he answered it correctly when he was asked about Andy Kotelnicki's say in this. And it was like, well, he'll have a say, but I've got the final say.
No, buck up for me.
Yeah. He's the head coach. And you know what? Coordinators, have we learned, they've come and gone. And yeah, it's actually the position coaches who've been around more. And I think he wants guys that fit his culture and have loyalty to him, not necessarily, you know, first loyalty to the coordinator.
He'll bring his short list to Andy and get his input, but it will have no impact on his final decision. That only rests in one chair in that building, and that will be James. He made it clear, I do need and want his input, but I don't need his thoughts on the decision I make. But not for me. I'm making it.
Yeah, but I do think I'm a little bit softer on that, Andy. I think he'll really want a choice that Andy Kotelnicki will approve of, just because, hey, they've got to work together. And, you know, I suspect that's the kind of thing now where Kotelnicki, Franklin have worked together now for a year. Hopefully they're in sync in what they're thinking. And James Franklin even mentioned the players, you know, Singleton and Catron Allen. And it was a great explanation that, you know what, we want them to be happy with the choice, but I'm not going to present choices to them ahead of time. Like, hey, we're looking at A, B, and C. And God forbid they say, oh, we really like choice B, and we end up with choice A. It sets them up for disappointment. So I think James Franklin's got it under control.
Oh, yeah, but I'm just going to say, he will ask Andy, here's A, B, and C, what do you think? And Andy Kotelnicki's job is, it doesn't matter what he thinks of A, B, or C, but he needs to voice that opinion to Coach Franklin. Whoever James chooses, this is a guy, Andy Kotelnicki's job, your job is to work with him and figure it out. That's your job. Well, my job is to pick him, your job is to figure it out, work together.
I don't think he wants a situation where it has to be figured out how to work together. No. But I get your point. I get your point, Andy. All right. Unfortunately, that is it. As always, we run out of time way too fast, Andy. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.